we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show, Western Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, June the 16th, 2017. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by my co-host, Jen Dobell.
Hello.
Well, in today's show, we'll be discussing local animal-related news and events in the past week, and there's been a lot happening, from legal action by the Vancouver Aquarium to last night's death of Daisy the porpoise at the Vancouver Aquarium. And then there's also the uncovering of egregious cruelty in the chicken industry here in BC. We'll be covering all that. We'll also be playing a fantastic 10-minute speech by Australian philanthropist Philip Woolen, which is not to be missed. So please do stay tuned for that as well. But first, I just wanted to talk about an event that we hosted at Animal Voices last week. This was last Friday, along with Vancouver Chicken Save. We co-hosted a film screening at the SFU Harbor Center downtown. It was a documentary film called Called to Rescue, and it was a film that covered the rescue stories of animals across 15 different animal sanctuaries in the U.S. I thought it was an amazing film. I want to get a copy of it myself. It's fairly new, and you can go to calledtorescuefilm.com, I believe it is, to find out more about it. But I just felt so honored to be able to see this film and to screen it as well to the public. What were your thoughts about the film, Jen?
Well, it made me think about how when I go on a vacation somewhere, I always want it to be somehow soul-fulfilling, and I want to be busy doing something productive. So I would plan my next vacation around visiting one of these sanctuaries, for sure. And one of the stories that stuck out for me the most, and I forget which sanctuary this calf was at, but it was a calf that had genuvaris, which is bow legs in the front legs. Mm-hmm. And to see it walk was just the saddest thing. And it was the part of the film where I started to cry. And they did give that calf surgery, and it learned to walk again, and then it was playing with a ball in the field.
I remember that was at Woodstock Sanctuary. Okay. With Jenny Brown, because Jenny is missing a leg, and then the cow had leg problems too, right? And
Were
playing soccer together,
yeah,
right?
And cows like to play soccer. Who knew?
Yeah, well, as I just posted on my Facebook yesterday, cows are just like dogs. Have you seen that video
going around?
I must have posted it on ours as well, Animal Voices Vancouver, if you want to look at that. I actually learned quite a lot from this film as well, and I want to have some of the people who spoke from the sanctuaries on our show one day. Sanctuary Day is actually coming up on July 1st, so
Perfect.
Maybe we'll do a show with featuring more sanctuaries in the near future.
Well, we did have Ellie Lax on from the Gentle Barn, and
she told some incredible stories. In the film. She's amazing.
She was. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just love Ellie. We've had her on a couple of times, and those are interviews not to be missed as well. So go to animalvoices.org and listen to our interviews with Ellie. And in particular, she has a program that she does with children who are at risk, and the only ways that they will communicate is through the animals. They won't communicate to people, and so they communicate with the animal with the children by telling the animal stories, which happen to be very similar to their own, and they're able to reach out. The police officer there who is part of that program said that you do with our kids in a few hours that just take us months and months to achieve.
Right. They're traumatized, sometimes abused children, and they hear the stories of the animals and relate and open up and heal themselves. It's beautiful.
Yeah. I'm just going to get you to move your mic up a little bit. We're all good there.
My mic is not staying erect.
Okay. Why don't you use the blue mic? That one's erect.
Okay.
How's here we
that?
Are. We're
we
all
good?
We're good now. Okay. So what happened last weekend?
Last weekend, are you talking about the March to Close All Slaughterhouses? Sorry,
absolutely.
I get all my events on my weekends mixed up. We're always busy doing animal rights issues. So, yes, it was March to Close All Slaughterhouses. I am really bad at guessing
how many people are in a crowd. But when we were going down the street, I would say that we covered more than a full city block, and we took up half a street.
I think there were 400 RSVPs for yeses and 900 maybes. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to say there were about 500 people there.
Okay.
I would say at least 400. I heard someone say 350.
We were loud anyway.
It was more than last year.
There were trucks. Yeah. There were two trucks. One had a huge drum and speakers on both the trucks. And then there was a wireless microphone, which former undercover investigator Jeffrey Geer had. And he was leading the chants and the speeches. And it was really powerful. I had goosebumps, and I'm used to doing things like this. And we were walking by people on the sidewalks who were eating animals, of course. Almost every restaurant serves animals.
I was leafleting most of the time and giving out leaflets talking about vegan eating to the restaurateurs standing mm-hmm. at their doorways watching in, mm-hmm. serving meat.
I was taking photos of all the sandwich board signs that promoted humane meat and grass-fed meat and everything that people think is synonymous with a non-cruel diet, and of course it's not. So I just thought that was ironic enough to take photos of next to an activist holding a sign of a tortured animal in a slaughterhouse. The signs were really powerful because these are images that people don't typically see, such as pigs in gestation crates where they can't move around for their entire lives. People don't know about that.
Yeah, so just to give a sort of picture and a summary of what the march was all about, it lasted a couple hours, and we were in downtown Vancouver going up and down these long streets, and we did some die-ins at mm-hmm. intersections. What's right. a die-in?
Everybody just drops to the ground, and mm-hmm. then on the speaker system they played the sounds of squealing pigs from slaughterhouses. This was real audio from slaughterhouses. It was quite impactful.
And I want to thank Jordan Reichart, who was one of the many people there taking photos and videos. He put together this montage that he posted yesterday, and I asked him if I could play some of it. There were also several very moving speeches. A 15-year-old, what was her name?
She goes by Hannah Miao on Facebook. She's got the loudest voice of any activist I know. She is so
articulate.
Authentic.
She's so and I was surprised to find out she was only 15. And
no, she's 18.
Oh, okay.
And another speech by the guest that we had on the show last week.
Who was that? Dominic Thompson?
Dominic Thompson.
Yeah, he's not in this video. But anyways, yeah. I'm going to play a clip, and then you can get an actual audio sort of picture of what this was about. And this is on our Facebook page as well.
Great.
Meat is murder!
Stop the slaughter!
Meat is murder!
Stop the slaughter!
Meat is murder!
Stop the slaughter!
Because the animals we slaughter have done nothing to deserve it!
We want justice for all the animals!
Because they scream in terror as they are forced to the kill floor!
We want justice for all the animals!
Because the animals are here! With us, not for us!
Slaughter!
Stop killing animals!
Stop eating animals!
Stop killing animals!
Stop eating animals!
Stop killing animals!
Stop eating animals!
It makes us feel uncomfortable when we see images of factory farms online. We become uneasy when we come face to face with our hypocrisy of loving dogs but eating cows, pigs, and chickens. We try to forget that we are a part of a cycle of death and torture that is the animal agriculture industry. We don't want to know that meat and other animal products we consume came from once breathing, living creatures whose lives were abruptly ended for that very purpose.
Stop the slaughter!
Stop the slaughter!
Stop the slaughter!
Eggs laying eggs until their bodies give out. What do we want?
The
curious pigs left dirty in crowded pens. What do we want?
To close all slaughterhouses.
For fish is suffocating in nets and farms. What do we want?
To close all slaughterhouses.
There is no humane way to kill someone who does not want to die. Whether the knife that you use is the same knife for a humane, organically raised, local, grass-fed animal as it is for animals raised in factory farms. So please don't be fooled. And the reason they fool you is because they know that you love animals. They know that humans have an intrinsic desire. We are connected to animals. and we do not want to hurt them intrinsically.
Meat is murder!
Stop the slaughter!
Meat is murder!
Stop the slaughter!
So, what do you think?
I have goosebumps again just watching this YouTube video.
Yeah, so once again, go to our, you can find it on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. I posted it either like yesterday or today. Mm-hmm. Actually, I did a lot of live video Facebook posting as well, and you can find that on last week, last Saturday. I did some live videos, and I think they're very powerful as well. I think that this event was just really important to really get the word out there in downtown Vancouver to, as I said, like all the people walking downtown on Robson Street, Granville Street, Denman Street, all the tourists. And as I was saying, I was handing out a lot of leaflets as well, just to sort of like even spread the message further. I think it's just, and this made the news as well. Like, this was in mainstream media news.
It was. And this didn't just happen in Vancouver. I believe the march in global. Paris had 3,500 people.
Yeah, because it originates in Paris. And I remember several years ago, I think this actually originated from, they started a movement called the World Weeks for the Abolition of Meat. And I did an interview with the organizer of that, maybe like 5 years ago. If you want to check our website for that podcast, her name was Florence. I remember that one. And I think that that movement has just grown maybe into this march, and their streets, talk about our streets being filled. You saw the pictures, right?
And that was a revolution. And that's what I am hopeful for around the world, that animal liberation is the next great social movement. And I don't just mean closing slaughterhouses. I mean the end of animal use for everything. Lab testing, clothing, everything, cosmetics.
And I think that just like, I don't see how people can disagree with what the speakouts were saying during this on the amplification systems in downtown Vancouver. Mm-hmm. It's wrong to kill animals. Stop the slaughter. How can anyone disagree with that?
Especially, but they do. We deal with it all the
time.
Well,
especially, well, we'll be talking about this soon, but especially in light of recent events this week. You attended another animal rights event in Victoria the week before last. Can you tell us about that?
That was National Animal Rights Day, and that one is quite different. It's not a march. It would, well, when we get to the event, we're marching quietly and we're holding signs of animals who human beings use for selfish reasons. And in other places around the world, they're actually holding frozen dead animals that the activists have been collecting for up to a year. And they're all handed to the activists who stand in rows in a public area for about 2 hours in silence while sad music plays. It's meant to be a memorial. And then afterwards, there were speeches, basically pleading with the public to open their eyes to what we're doing. And in some places in the world, they do a vegan picnic, potluck, basically, for everybody that's watching, to just show people that there's another way, and it's healthy and it's tasty, and we don't need to be using these animals for food or anything else.
Yeah, I saw the footage that was done with that, of the event that was done in Venice. Mm-hmm. And they had the dead animals there.
Really powerful.
Yeah.
And the activists are crying as they're holding them, and who wouldn't? You're looking down at these animals and wondering what their life was like, and most likely it was a life of torture and oppression and exploitation. Not a day of love.
Right, exactly. So I wanted to move on and talk about a few other initiatives that we have going on here. So I know I've talked about this on the show before, and I'd like to talk about it again because this comes up every year around this time, is we speak about on the show about how you can use your own skills and interests to help animals. Mm-hmm. And Jan, you've talked about this before. You give massages for the animals, not to non-human animals, but to human animals.
I would like to massage animals, yeah. Maybe not horses. But
yeah, that's actually a job skill as well. But yeah, you do charity massages for charity. And I think that's wonderful that you have this skill. And you have many skills, but you have this one unique skill that you use for your career, and you use that for the animals. So one thing that I do is I run a lot. I'm a runner. And I'm really into working on my fitness and my running. And for years now, I've been taking part in the Scotiabank Charity Challenge as a benefit fundraiser for the Vancouver Humane Society, which is a local charity that we have here in Vancouver, and they do great work on all types of different issues facing animals. And they take part in this event where all these charities have fundraisers who are running on behalf of them, and then the runners raise money. So I'll be doing that again this year. So I've been doing it for, I don't know for how long, at least 5 or 6 years or so. And at first I was just doing the 5K runs. And for the last 2 years, I've been running the half marathon, which is like, it truly is a challenge. That was my actual, my first half marathon ever was 2 years ago, and I trained for it thinking that I could do it, and I did. It was slow, but I raised $1,000 that year for the animals. So
wow, that's incredible.
I was just so happy to be able to do that. And honestly, people, I find that people are willing to donate more money when they know you're running 21.1 kilometers instead of 5 kilometers, because really, like, it takes a lot of my time and effort to train for this. And I did it last year too. And my, I learned some tricks from the year before and had an even better run. This year, I'm unable to run the half marathon. I've been struggling with health issues, and I can't get the training runs done, but I'm still running, and I'm happy to say that my 5Ks and just like running in general is faster than ever when I have good days. So I'm doing the fundraiser this year just for the 5K, and I look forward to breaking my 5K record, which I actually just did last week, but I think I will again at Stanley Park because we have a flat surface there. So if anyone's interested in donating to Vancouver Humane Society in honor of my run, that's going to be on the 25th of June. You can go to our Facebook page. I put a link there, Animal Voices Vancouver. But I also just want to encourage people to do what, you know, do what interests you, do what you're good at, and find a way to use your skills for the animals. And in saying that, there's actually another event, like just in helping too, because we're all animals, right? Human and non-human animals. And sometimes people say to us, or to me, or maybe to you, Jen, why do you care so much about non-human animals? What about us humans?
Oh, right? I'm so sick of that argument. It's perfectly reasonable to expect that you can help animals while helping humans at the same time. I can refrain from eating animals or using them for anything while also helping humans. I do a lot to help humans, and I'm just absolutely fed up with that ridiculous argument.
Yeah. So another person in our community who does a lot both for animals and humans is David Isbister. He feeds people. He's an amazing cook, and he uses his talent of making incredible food, which I know he's doing right now because that's his business. And he makes food, and we actually were the lucky recipients of some of his food. He handed out food to the chicken vigil last week, and they brought some here. It was so delicious.
Really,
he makes some of the best food I've ever had, vegan or not. And I know I know that people who are omnivores will go to him to buy his vegan bacon, in quotes. It's plant-based, it's vegan.
Yeah.
And they say it's better than regular bacon. Anyways,
I buy his products for my clients as a way to try to turn them onto a vegan lifestyle.
Oh, absolutely.
And they love it. So it's plant-based foods and natural products.
Yeah.
If you're looking for him.
So he's actually starting an initiative just like on his own. He happens to, you know, own this business, but just on his own and with anyone who wants to help. So that's going to be me, because I want to help people in need. On July 1st, which is known as Canada Day, we are going to be helping people in need in the downtown east side in Vancouver. It's known as to be Canada's poorest postal code, and there are people there who do need help. So David is going to be cooking up a bunch of delicious vegan food, and we're going to be handing it out. And we're also collecting all sorts of hygiene and toiletry items, and he's already collected 150 pairs of socks, and we're going to be giving out these gift packages to maybe about 150, 200 people in the downtown east side on July 1st, and handing out food as well. So he has made a Facebook event for this, and I'll share it once again on our Facebook page today if you want to look at it. It's called a Day of Giving, I believe. So if you're interested in helping out or making donations, you can go to that page and take a look. And I'm looking forward to being there and making a difference in the community where humans need it as well, just for their basic needs.
And our Facebook page is Animal Voices Vancouver.
That's right. So what happened this week with chickens, Jen?
Oh, once again, another Mercy for Animals undercover investigation was exposed. And I always wish that the media would say this, and they don't. These are not anomalies. When you see animal abuse, it's inherent in the industry. In many ways, it's perfectly legal. A lot of the things that were seen in the video of the Elite Farm Services chicken catching company who supplies Lilydale chicken, half of the things that I saw in that video I know to be perfectly legal, such as throwing chickens into these drawer-like baskets that they're transported.
That's how they're transported.
Yeah, and how would you think
I don't
that
think
you,
they can even stand upright in those.
No, they're squished in there and they're struggling and trying to flap their way out as they're put in. There's no way to humanely put them in there without shoving them in because they're trying
breaking
to escape.
Wings.
They're breaking their wings. They're breaking their necks. But let's talk about the more egregious cruelty that we saw, which was there were workers that were mimicking sex acts using the chickens. They ripped off their wings.
You've probably seen that on Global TV or CTV.
Yeah, ripping off their necks. It was horrific. They were stepping on live chickens, throwing them, kicking them. I know people who've worked in this industry, everyone, and I want you to know that the people I've spoken to who've worked in this industry see this everywhere they go.
And we'll be covering this more on next week's show, but you can also go to chickentorture.ca. If you don't know what we're talking about, it's all over the news, though.
Right.
So we have an interview to present.
Yes, we're going to be speaking with Gary Charbonneau, the director of Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered, which is a documentary released in 2015. You can watch that for free online, vancouveraquariumuncovered.com. And he's speaking in regards to the recent death at the Vancouver Aquarium. Another one. There's so many deaths at the Vancouver Aquarium. So this was Daisy the harbor porpoise, who died yesterday.
On today's show, we're speaking with Vancouver filmmaker Gary Charbonneau, and the recent film that he's created was Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered from 2015. Gary, thank you for being here today.
Thanks for having me, Jen.
So you've been quite outspoken on the issue of the high death rate at the Vancouver Aquarium. What's your opinion on yesterday's death of Daisy the harbor porpoise?
Well, of course, it's really sad. Anytime an animal passes away, it's heart-wrenching, especially, I'm sure, to some of the staff there who've been so close to Daisy. That must be hard on them as well. Unfortunately, though, we're looking at another statistic at the Vancouver Aquarium, whereby we have this Pacific harbor porpoise who died at approximately 8 years of age, and yet they can live into their 20s. So we have another more evidence of early death at the Vancouver Aquarium. And we saw when Jack the porpoise had passed away, he was even younger than Daisy. So what we're seeing is that every single cetacean that's residing at the Vancouver Aquarium is dying a very young death. And the ones that are born there, as the public probably already knows by now, that the Vancouver Aquarium has a 90% infant death rate. And if you include Keela, she was only 21 when she passed away in November. She wasn't an infant, but she wasn't old. And so they have 100% death rate for all the animals born there that have never even come close to living half their lives or half a natural life in the wild.
And this news of Daisy's death comes on the heels of a recent legal challenge by the Vancouver Aquarium toward the Park Board, and you're the recipient of a lawsuit by them as well. So what are your thoughts on that?
A lot more wasted money. I think it's another frivolous lawsuit. Park Board's going back decades of wanting to end captivity because it hasn't been a successful program. But every time a Park Board, as I know because I interviewed quite a few of Park Board commissioners in the past and present, and they've been wanting to close down the captive program for, as I said, many years, but the aquarium continues to threaten and bring forward legal actions to stop what really should have happened a long time ago. So the legal action has nothing to do about the animals or a successful program. It's clear it has to do with profit. This lawsuit shows that the public is no longer supporting Mr. Nightingale and his captive program. A lot of money was spent in the past few months by the aquarium on advertising to try to convince the public that they need their captive program for whatever reasons. But they're no longer talking about its success as they have in the past because it hasn't been successful and the truth has come out. So now they're saying things that perhaps the rescue center will be harmed and they won't be able to rescue animals that are stranded. And what they've really done is they've lost public support, and now they're trying to emotionally blackmail the public with things like the rescue center if they don't have captivity.
Mm-hmm. And let's also point out here that the lawsuit is publicly funded. It's taxpayer dollars, right?
Well, it's yes and no. The Vancouver Aquarium is nonprofit, so what they're actually using is donor and membership funds to pay for all these lawsuits that they're involved in, which that money could easily be better spent on conservation or the rescue center itself. And but speaking of taxpayers' money, provincially and federally, $15 million was given to the aquarium in the past, I believe, within 10 years. So, yeah, depending on where the money's actually coming from, one way or another, it's paid by the public, and it's a lot of wasted funds.
I really resent that my tax dollars go towards these types of things. So the upper management at the aquarium has repeatedly stated that this park board bylaw will affect their ability to rescue animals in the future, even after the park board commissioners firmly called them out for the fear-mongering deception. And I was in the room at the meeting when they did this. All the major media cameras were present, yet the rhetoric continued in the media and the public was effectively deceived. How do you feel about this?
The public has been deceived for many years, but that's all changing now because they're hearing the truth. They're seeing the facts, they're seeing the statistics, and they're not buying or believing what the aquarium has to sell anymore. And this is why the lawsuit actually came out, because they tried to turn the public against Park Board, but the public actually supported Park Board. So now they've done their last effort, which is another lawsuit. And like as you firmly pointed out, it's wasted money. That money could be better spent. And unfortunately, I think for Mr. Nightingale and some of the upper management, I think they've come to the end of their life cycle as management at the Vancouver Aquarium. And I think we're probably, hopefully, going to see some new management and a new direction, one that will actually fund the rescue center properly, and one that will fund conservation research and education properly. And that's something that we need for our science center.
Right. And I just have to reiterate this again, because I think a lot of people don't understand that the animal rights activists are fully supportive of a marine mammal rescue center that is operating properly. But we're not so much a fan of the Vancouver Aquarium itself, with over 50,000 creatures and most of them not actually being rescued and no rehabilitation and release being done there. So just to clarify, you and animal rights advocates are in support of an effectively run marine mammal rescue center.
There's no doubt. I've been advocating a new location for the rescue center, and I've also pointed out that when the Vancouver Aquarium brags about saving or rescuing 170 animals, that is those numbers are exceptionally low. When you compare to Sausalito Rescue Center or the Los Angeles Rescue Center, they have no captivity, they don't even have admission, and they're rescuing up to 1,000 animals per year. And when you look at their facilities, they are world class. When you look at ours, it looks like a disheveled type of old, like an old Cirque du Soleil parking lot, in a sense, with white tarps and blue bins. And when you have an aquarium that earns $37 million a year, has acquired $100 million extra for expansion purposes, and when you look at our rescue center, there's no way that Mr. Nightingale can hold that ransom for his captivity program, because he's virtually ignored the rescue center for many years. And so the public has also been quite disapproving of Mr. Nightingale using the rescue center to keep his captive program.
And something else that I feel is being largely ignored in mainstream media is that the Vancouver Aquarium continues to allow personal encounters with a lot of their animals. This is where the public can come in and touch them and feed them and expose them to human toxins and viruses. And I just find this very irresponsible, given the fact that a lot of animals continue to die here, and they say that they don't know where these toxins are coming from. Wouldn't it make more sense to secure their environment a bit better and not allow people to come in and touch the animals or even their food?
Well, Jen, that is an excellent question, and you raise some very serious concerns for not just the animal safety, but for human safety as well. What you're talking about is a zoonosis or zoonosis, depending on where you're from. This is a transmission of disease between humans and animals and humans. And under no circumstances should the Vancouver Aquarium allow any persons to touch their animals. Because of the transmission of disease, the cetaceans, as an example, are not accustomed to our diseases, our viruses, and you have all kinds of people touching these animals. And as you pointed out, a lot of times they don't know why these animals are dying, yet they continue having the public touch them. And I'm very curious to know, it would be interesting to see how many people after an encounter program were actually sick from the Vancouver Aquarium.
Mm-hmm.
Because nobody's ever, I'm sure if there were people who were ill after an encounter, they probably wouldn't think it's because of the encounter, and it may very well be. And there's been rashes, there's been attacks in other aquaria from these animals on people. So it's something that's very dangerous for both animals and people. So I'm glad you brought that up.
And I've called the aquarium numerous times, and I've spoken with their staff in person, and I've asked if they ask their clients to wash their hands before they come in and have these experiences. And the answer is no, because the soap residue on their hands would be bad for the animals. But I said, well, what if they have sunscreen residue or some kind of hand lotion residue? And they just looked at me blankly when I asked in person. And actually, when I asked in person, they had a touch pool set up outside the aquarium with a starfish and an anemone and some other creatures, and people were invited to just stick their hands right in the tank. And I said, you don't know that people don't have sunscreen on their hands. And they were saying, well, there's a filter system. And I just thought it was just so irresponsible.
I agree. I've actually encountered the same thing, is that when I've questioned the aquarium, they used the same reason that certain types of soap were not good. But as I explained, there are certain types of soaps that should be used, and not using any soaps is very dangerous. It's not just sunscreen. They could have all kinds of stuff. You know, when they're changing their shoes or tying their shoelaces, their shoes are dirty, their hands get dirty, they have a cold and they're coughing or sneezing into their hand. They need to wash their hands, but more importantly, they need not to touch these animals.
Yes, I don't think that these animals should be exploited in that way, or in any way. I don't think that they should be in captivity to begin with, let alone having a situation where they are unwilling participants in being poked and prodded for so-called educational purposes. Anyway, thank you so much for making time for us today, Gary. I always appreciate your opinion.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me, Jen.
Okay, have a great day. Thank you.
You take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So that was Gary Charbonneau, director of the film Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered. And again, you can watch that for free online at vancouveraquariumuncovered.com. So now the two remaining cetaceans at the aquarium are Chester the false killer whale and Helen the Pacific white-sided dolphin. And Chester the false killer whale was rescued from near Tofino and was very young, and it's likely that he was unable to be reunited with his pod and probably too young for release. And in Helen's case, quite different, actually. She was purchased from the Inoshima Aquarium, where she resided for 9 years. She was not rescued. She had no stranding number, which would have indicated that she was rescued. And it's very likely that she came from the cruel drive hunt. If you don't know anything about that, watch the documentary The Cove. It is absolutely brutal. The drive hunt supports aquariums. They can sell the animals for up to $150,000 once the dolphins are trained to perform. A lot of the public tend to think that she was rescued because she's missing a fin, but in fact, the fungal infection that caused her to have her fin amputated was acquired in the aquarium. She wasn't rescued in that situation. She was not a rescue. So this is just really important for us to get the message out to the public that we always need to scratch beneath the surface when there's a facility or facilities that profit from use of animals. We need to ask more questions.
Thanks for that great info in that interview, Jen.
Did you know that Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM, has over 90 different shows produced by over 350 community members? This wide range of programming produced by our diverse group of programmers ensures that we have a show you'll love. We have shows on feminism, spirituality, disability rights, politics, unions, and parenting. We play jazz, indie rock, reggae, blues, and folk. We broadcast in a dozen different languages and have more First Nations programs than any other radio station in Vancouver. Find your show on Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. All different, all the time.
Side Story on Co-op Radio 100.5 FM. Listen and reason with Aisha every second Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. Lend your ears and thoughts on topics such as humanitarian issues, social justice, activism on homelessness, poverty, injustice here at home in Canada and around the globe. Eastside Story comes to you every second Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. on Co-op Radio 100.5 FM.
Odibere,
Odiboshe,
Odibere o,
Odiboshe,
Odibere o,
Odiboshe.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
And now we have some upcoming events if you would like to take part in some animal advocacy. Tomorrow, from 9 to 11, meet activists at the corner of Commercial and Hastings, which is the Hallmark Chicken Slaughterhouse, to raise awareness about what animals are going through for our food. And then after that, from 12 to 1 p.m. in Port Coquitlam, there is going to be a large protest at the Lilydale Chicken Slaughterhouse, 1910 Kingsway, Port Coquitlam. We're hoping that the media will be there as well. So this should be quite a big event. And this is in light of the recent Mercy for Animals undercover investigation, which exposes how badly the animals were treated by a chicken catching company that works for Lilydale as a contracted company. And there's a potluck at Trout Lake afterwards at 2 p.m. until 4. And so you can bring vegan food and please also bring a reusable plate and cutlery. And this is at 3350 Victoria Drive. There's a big parking lot there. It's right at the community center.
So I'm excited to announce an event that our co-host Sinead Sanders is going to be participating in. And it's going to be an all animal advocacy slash music slash vegan food night event. It's on Saturday, July the 15th, starting at 6:30 p.m. It's called Night of the Neophytes, and you can find that on Facebook. It's an evening promoting animal awareness of animal rights and veganism with delicious food provided and catered by David Spistard of Plant-Based Foods. And this is happening at Pat's Pub and Brew House on 403 East Hastings Street. So as I mentioned, there's a Facebook event for it where you can find out more about some of the bands that are going to be at it. It's basically an evening of female bands, and there's going to be also a talk by animal rights lawyer Anna Pippas, who we've had on the show many times before, and performances by the bands called The Furniture, the SHIT Talkers, the Daisy Stranglers, Sinead Sanders from Animal Voices, Beaverette, Siobhan Duval. And yeah, so we're looking forward to this. I'm going to be going to that. I can't wait to have a full night that's just music, and you can also order a dinner there if you're interested as well, and there'll be more info about that on the Facebook page. We'll post this on our Facebook page at Animal Voices Vancouver. Another event I'm looking forward to is Vegtoria, Victoria's annual Veg Fest, which is happening in Victoria, BC on Saturday, July the 22nd from 12 to 5 p.m. And this is going to be happening at Centennial Square. This event will feature your favorite vegan businesses and animal advocacy organizations from across North America. Wow, tons of delicious vegan food to eat, prizes, speakers, bands, and more. Vegtoria is an inclusive, family-friendly event where all are welcome to celebrate and to enjoy the festivities. Once again, that's on Saturday, July the 22nd Jen, do you think we should go for Animal Voices? We've done this before.
I've been
a lot of fun.
You and I were talking about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I want to. I need to be able to organize this. So maybe you'll see us there.
You know
hopefully.
What? I think I can commit to that. Let's do it.
Okay. Well, right. At least Jen will be there. I hope to make it as well. But yeah, we did it several years ago. Animal Voices had a table there. It was a lot of fun. I would love to take a trip to Victoria. So yeah, if you want to come with me and you're listening.
Sounds good. Let's do
it. So you can find more info at their website, vegetoria.ca. And I just wanted to put a quick plug for me. If you live in the Point Grey area or you've got kids and you like a good parade, I'll be playing in a parade tomorrow in Point Grey. Starts at 10 a.m. at Blank and Trimble. And then it's part of the Point Grey Fiesta Days, which happens this weekend in that community. And then afterwards in the afternoon, one of the local churches will be doing a blessing of the animals for companion animals in the park. So I'm not too sure what that entails, but it sounds really nice.
And there's I hope they're not eating any animals afterwards.
Oh, geez. Yeah. A barbecue and then eating animals. At least, though, your companion animals can be blessed. And there was a picture of previously someone brought a chicken, their companion animal chicken. So that's nice. So that's happening tomorrow, the parade, me, 10 a.m., and then the blessing of companion animals in the park after. So thanks to everyone who submitted these events to us. If you have any animal-friendly related events that you would like to have announced on the air, please send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver.
Well, next up, we're going to be playing a speech by Australian philanthropist Philip Wallen. He's a former VP of Citibank and GM of Citicorp. He became vegan and a prominent member of the animal rights movement, and he conducts intervention programs to promote animal welfare and abstinence. And I find this is one of the speeches that tends to go around the internet when people are trying to veganize their friends. It's that powerful. Let's listen to that now.
King Lear, late at night on the cliffs, asks the blind Earl of Gloucester, "How do you see the world?" And the blind man Gloucester replies, "I see it feelingly." And shouldn't we all? Animals must be off the menu, because tonight they are screaming in terror in the slaughterhouses, in crates and in cages. Vile, ignoble gulags of despair. You see, I heard the screams of my dying father as his body was ravaged by the cancer that killed him. And I realized I'd heard those screams before. In the slaughterhouse, their eyes stabbed out and their tendons slashed, on the cattle ships to the Middle East, and the dying mother wail as a harpoon explodes in her brain as she calls out to her calf. Their cries were the cries of my father. And I discovered that when we suffer as equals. And in their capacity to suffer, a dog is a pig, is a bear, is a boy. Meat today is the new asbestos, more murderous than tobacco. CO2, methane, and nitrous oxide from the livestock industry are killing our oceans with acidic, hypoxic dead zones. 90% of small fish are ground up into pellets to feed to livestock. Vegetarian cows today are the world's largest ocean predators. The oceans are dying in our time. By 2048, all our fisheries will be dead, the lungs and the arteries of the earth. Billions of bouncy little chicks are ground up alive simply because they are male. Only 100 billion people have ever lived. 7 billion people live today. And yet we torture and kill 2 billion sentient living beings every week. 10,000 entire species are wiped out every year because of the actions of one. And we are now facing the 6th mass extinction in cosmological history. If any other organism did this, a biologist would call them a virus. It is a crime against humanity of unimaginable proportions. But happily, the world is changing. 10 years ago, Twitter was a bird sound. WWW was a stuck keyboard. Cloud was in the sky. 4G was a parking space. Google was a baby's burp. Skype was a typo. And Al-Qaeda was my plumber. Victor Hugo said, "There is nothing more powerful than an idea whose time has come." Well, animal rights today is now the greatest social justice issue since the abolition of slavery. Do you know there are over 600 million vegetarians in this world, and that is bigger than the United States, England, France, Germany, Spain, Italy, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, all put together. If we were one nation, we would be bigger than the 27 nations of the European Union. Can you believe that? And despite this massive demographic footprint, we are still drowned out by the raucous hunt and shoot and killing cartels who believe that violence is the answer when it should not even be a question. Meat kills animals, kills us, and is killing our economies. Medicare has already bankrupted the United States. They will need $8 trillion invested in treasury bills just to pay the interest, and they have precisely zero. They could shut down every school, Army, Navy, Air Force, Homeland Security, Marines, CIA, and FBI, and they still will not have the money to pay their doctor bills. And our Cornell and Harvard say that the optimum amount of meat in a healthy human diet is precisely zero. Water, as you know, is the new oil. Nations will soon be going to war for it. Underground aquifers that took millions of years to fill are now running dry. It takes 50,000 liters of precious drinking water to make 1 kilo of beef. Today, 1 billion people are hungry. 20 million people will die from malnutrition. Cutting meat by only 10% will feed 100 million people, and eliminating meat will end starvation forever. If everyone ate a Western diet, we would need 2 planet Earths to feed us. We've only got one, and she is dying. Greenhouse gas emissions from livestock is 50% greater than transport, as Peter said. Cars, trains, buses, ships, lorries, the whole lot. And as I travel around the world, I see poor countries who sell their grain to the West while their own children starve in their arms. And the West feeds it to livestock so we can eat a steak? Am I the only one who sees this as a crime? Believe me, every morsel of meat we eat is slapping the tear-stained face of a hungry child. When I look into her eyes, do I remain silent? The earth can produce enough food for everyone's need, but not enough for everyone's greed. We are facing the perfect storm. If any nation had developed weapons that could wreak such havoc on the planet, we would launch a preemptive military strike and bomb it back into the Bronze Age. But it's not a rogue state, it's an industry. The good news is we don't have to bomb it. We can just stop buying it. Sir George Bush was wrong. The axis of evil does not run through Iraq, Iran, or North Korea. It runs through our dining tables. Weapons of mass destruction are our knives and forks. Our proposition is the Swiss Army knife of the future. It solves our environmental, water, human health problems, and ends cruelty forever. The Stone Age didn't end because we ran out of stones. This cruel, disgusting industry will end because we run out of excuses. Meat is like the 1 and 2 cent coins. It costs more to make than it's worth. And I come from the bush. Farmers are the ones with the most to gain. Farming won't end, it would boom. Only the product line will change. Farmers would make so much money, they won't even bother counting it, and I'd be the first to applaud them. Governments would love us. New industries would emerge and flourish. Health insurance premiums would plummet. Hospital waiting lists would disappear. Hell, we'd be so healthy, we'd have to shoot someone just to start a cemetery. So tonight I have 2 challenges for the opposition. 2 challenges. Meat causes a wide range of cancers and heart disease. Would they name 1 disease caused by a vegetarian diet? And 2, I'm funding the Earthlings trilogy. If the opposition is so sure of their ground, I challenge them to send a copy of the Earthlings DVD to all their colleagues and all their customers. Go on, I dare you. Animals are not just other species, they are other nations, and we murder them at our peril. The peace map is drawn on a menu. Peace is not just the absence of war, it is the presence of justice. Justice must be blind to race, color, religion, or species. If she's not blind, she will be a weapon of terror. And tonight, there is unimaginable terror in those ghastly Guantanamos we call factory farms or slaughterhouses. Believe me, if slaughterhouses had glass walls, we wouldn't be having this debate tonight. You see, I believe another world is possible. And on a quiet night, I can hear her breathing. Let's get animals off the menu and out of these torture chambers. Please vote tonight for those who have no voice. Thank you.
So that was Philip Woolen. He's an Australian philanthropist, and I've seen some version of the speech before, called the best speech you will, one of the best speeches you will ever see.
And it definitely is.
Yeah. So why did you choose to have this played on the show today?
Well, again,
Jen?
I have goosebumps right now, and I've heard that multiple times. It's one of the speeches that I send to people that I'm trying to turn on to a more compassionate lifestyle, because it's so powerful. I can't imagine anybody listening to that and not being completely sucked into his words and feeling their own level of responsibility around the horrible things that he's talking about that we turn a blind eye to. It's willful ignorance on the part of most people, and it's a real wake-up call. And I was shown that speech by my dear friend Jeff Regeer, who is a former undercover investigator with Mercy for Animals. And when I met him, he was still doing these jobs, and I was just constantly asking him questions about those industries. And I had been vegan, I think, 6 months before I met him, so I was still learning a lot. And yeah, this is definitely one of the things that I saw in that journey that will stick with me, and I'll share a lot.
And there's so many resources out there that you can use now to educate yourself, because we have the internet, we have Netflix, we have YouTube. What are some of your resources, other resources that you point out to people, Jen?
Well, I always suggest, of course, to watch Earthlings. I think every vegan animal rights activist will mention that.
We talk about that on almost every show, don't we?
We do. So if you don't know what Earthlings is, it's a 95-minute film that talks about how animals are used by humans for purposes that are really not necessary. It's tough to watch, but the way that I present it to people is this. I'm asking you to spend 95 minutes of your life to witness how your choices have impacted their entire lives from birth to death. And I'm talking thousands of animals. Have you ever thought about how many animals died for you personally in your life?
Yeah, well, they say you're saving 200 animals a year if you go vegan or vegetarian. So times that by your whole life, times all the animals that you have worn as clothes. Used for makeup, cosmetic testing, used for entertainment. So many. Mm-hmm. So many.
And so other films I recommend if you want more of an environmental angle rather than an ethical animal rights angle is Cowspiracy. You can find that on Netflix. And also Food Choices is on Netflix. That's a health issue. So nothing graphic in Cowspiracy or Food Choices.
So the follow-up to Cowspiracy is called What the Health? And that's on Netflix now too, starting today.
Right. Good. Okay. Check that out, everybody. Most people have a Netflix account or a friend who can loan them the password. And also I always recommend vegankit.ca. If you want to know how to go vegan, why to go vegan, absolutely all of your questions are answered on vegankit.ca.
So I just wanted to touch upon too what we were speaking about before is like this isn't just, we don't speak just about animal issues here. It's actually, it's a full societal issue. As Philip Woolen says, he said in the speech, animal rights today is now the greatest social justice issue since the abolition of slavery. And I just want to stress how important it is to recognize that this affects everyone, right? He speaks about how there's 1 billion people that are hungry right now today, and that cutting meat by only 10% would feed 100 million people, and eliminating meat will end starvation forever. Mm-hmm. So we really need to get our act together. And it starts with one person. It starts with you. It starts by you educating yourself by getting on Netflix, going on YouTube, going on our Facebook page where we can post this again, and educating yourself and becoming aware about how all of these issues that are connected to animal abuse. You've probably seen the investigation of the chicken cruelty all over the news this week, which we'll feature more on the show next week. But a lot of people who are meat eaters disagree with that. Start making the connections, right?
And one day future generations will look back and say, I can't believe we did that to animals and that I was complicit in it and that I argued in favor of it, because that's what's happening right now. Most people are arguing in favor of continuing animal cruelty, even though we know it's bad for our health, it's bad for the environment. This is a crisis. This is a serious crisis, and people are not waking up to it.
Yeah, so that's today's show that we put together in a little bit over an hour.
Amazing. Great job, Allison.
Great job, Jan.
So you've been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM, CFRO, Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada, us preachy vegans here. Please join us on our next show next Friday, June the 23rd. I, Jen Dobell, will be hosting with two guests, Anna Pippis, animal rights lawyer with Animal Justice, and a former worker from the chicken industry. He will be discussing the recent Lilydale chicken slaughterhouse investigation by Mercy for Animals. We here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. Animalvoices.org is where you can stream shows or download the shows as podcasts, read our show blog with detailed links, and subscribe via iTunes. Stay in touch with us via our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. You can also send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, and Facebook is Animal Voices Vancouver. To end the show today, I'm still so in awe of the concert I went to last night. I'm sure many of you out there saw Tool at Rogers Arena. Absolutely epic. So we're going to be ending with Sober by Tool. Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock next with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
Trust in me.